You're listening to the Tilehurst End Podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Hello, or zdravo, as they say in Serbia, and welcome to the Tilehurst End Podcast. The 2020-21 season is just 1 week away, but this is not a season preview podcast. Oh no. For the fourth time in 2.5 years, we bring you a one-off show reflecting on the news that Reading have once again changed their manager. That's right, Mark Bowen is out and Veljko Panovic is in, and we're here to discuss what it all means for Reading. My name is Ollie Allen, and joining me to pick apart a mad few days, it's a man who has now seen 9 managerial changes since he founded the Tilehurst End 9 years ago. It's Dan Wimbush. How's it going, Dan?
Ollie, thanks for having me back. Yeah, I think I'm due for a shot soon.
And also joining me this afternoon is assistant editor Adam Jones. How's it going, Adam?
Very good, thank you. I didn't expect to be here this time last week. Let's just put it that way.
No, I was looking forward to a nice week off from all things Reading Football Club in the nicest possible way until the season starts next week. But here we are after a mad, mad week, as I say. Before we move on, as ever, thanks to our podcast sponsors, ZCZ Films. Unlike Mark Bowen, they have signed up for the new season, for which we are incredibly grateful. We're also incredibly grateful, of course, to all our Patreons who continue to generously donate every month to help the website and the podcast. If you wish to do the same, it's patreon.com/thetilehurstend to make a pledge. And you would, of course, have our eternal thanks. Right then, where on earth to start? As I say, it's been a mad, mad week. And it all began on Monday when the news was confirmed that Nigel Howe had left his position as the club's chief executive and been replaced by a Mr. Dae-Yong Pang. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. Pang is a man who's known very little about, of course, but he has worked closely with Dae-Yong for a number of years, as the club statement said, and also a bit of Google digging suggested he was also on the board of KSV Rosselaer, the Belgian side that Daiju Lee used to own. Adam, this came as the first surprise of the week. What for you do you think might have been behind that change? I think for me it was almost, it sort of smacks of sort of Dae-Yong simply wanting more control and sort of putting a close friend in a more official role.
Well, for me, I mean, you looked on Twitter and you saw the rumours that obviously Howe and Dae-Yong had fallen out a little bit and that sort of thing. And you thought, even when Nigel Howe was appointed, that Dae-Yong and Howe were the unlikely pairing, because you had Dae-Yong ready to spend a lot of money, and you always associated Nigel Howe with that prudent kind of sensible spending. And to be honest, you know, with Howe's appointment on the EFL board, I mean, Howe looked borderline silly because of the financial issues that we've had with FFP and that sort of thing. And I just think that there's too many differences. But I think it's always good to have dissent in the boardroom and disagreements. But I just think Mr. Dae wants a man that's closer to him. I absolutely agree with you on that. I think that, yeah, definitely he wanted a guy that was definitely with him more. And I just think in the end, there was just too many differences between Howe and Mr. Dae.
Yeah, we've heard rumblings sort of all summer, really, of disagreement between Howe and Dae-Yong. Nigel Howe came out in a Star meeting last month saying that fans should be prepared for player sales because the club was in cash conservation mode. I think they were battening down the hatches to try and save cash ahead of the new season. And then it comes out that Dae-Yong doesn't want to sell John Swift at all costs. So immediately from there was alarm bells ringing for me. Dan, there has been a suggestion that sort of Howe hadn't had much control for a while, which he'd supposedly become quite frustrated at. How do you look back sort of on his overall time as chief exec since he came back in December 2018, I think it was? He, of course, came back in and to try and clean up that mess left by Mr. Ron Gawley.
Yeah, well, he came in as a firefighter, didn't he, really? I think the bar was set super low for him with Ron Gawley's tenure. Our interview on the Tilehurst End with Brunt of Raiden sort of hinted at some of the chaos left behind in his wake. And in the dealings and things I've had with the football club over the years, it was clear that that Ron was ripping things up left, right and centre. And what he put in place clearly wasn't fit for purpose because things were only going one way. So coming in, he obviously knew a lot of the staff that was still at the football club. He knew how to run a championship football club. But look, I mean, has his tenure been a success? Probably not. You've really got to look at the bottom line and you look at the chaos we're still in. Our wages to turnover ratio is still bonkers. We've been, you know, flirting with FFP regulations. And there's this clear sort of dissent between, you know, what we should be doing and the ambitions of the owner. So I look back and I think he's done his best. He seems a fairly decent chap, but I can't sit here and say, oh God, he's an absolutely stellar chief exec that we're going to be gutted to lose, because even, I have to take it back to his first spell in charge. I mean, these sort of problems were there before Ron Gourlay took over as well. Let's not forget that, you know, our wages turnover were sky high. We had all the issues in the Clark reign with loanees and conflicting recruitment. So look, how much power he's had has been the key question, and only he and several very high ranking people at the club will know. But look, he's overseen a spell that has led to several bottom half finishes since he came in and sort of really had power after Anton Zingarevich, and apart from that year and a half away under Gourlay. So look, as I said, I can't really say I'm going to miss him greatly, but it is always the fear of the unknown of what's next. And Ron Gourlay has shown that you can always get worse.
Yeah, I think the thing for me about Howe is that he knows Reading Football Club, and whether you agree with what he's done over the last few years or not, he knows the club inside out. He's a close associate of John Medeski. He knows how the club works, and bringing in Dai Yong Pang, who, again, I've got no idea who he is, so I can't speak negatively about him, but he doesn't seem to be a football person. He seems to be more of a, as I say, a close associate of Dai Yong, just to give Dai Yong more power. So how much influence Nigel Howe ever had in the last few years, again, I'm not sure we'll ever know. But it was then, Adam, on Tuesday morning that reports on Mark Bowen's future first started to emerge. What was your first reaction to seeing that rumour, Adam? Because I'm not sure mine is probably clean enough to say on what is, I hope, a family-friendly show.
Disbelief. I think there was a lot of disbelief. I suppose people might be surprised considering I wrote that article that time ago, that month ago. But disbelief for sure, because I think it came after the Gillingham game. And at that time, we looked like we were in quite a decent system with the 3-6-1. I never thought I'd be a fan of the three at the back, but I thought it was pretty decent. And I thought the changing of the CEO was a big enough step for the club. You know, changing CEO at any time for any football club is huge, absolutely huge, because they're one of the most important people at the club, along with manager. So to change manager now, for me, is just absolute madness. I was in absolute disbelief. And to be honest, there's not that much to add for me, because I was just absolutely speechless. I couldn't really say anything. If there was a time to make a change managerially, he had to do it, you know, perhaps even before the season ended. But yeah, I'm just absolute disbelief. And nothing else really more to add to that. It was just unbelievable.
I think you touched on it. That's the whole timing thing, I think, is the main issue for me. I mean, we played Colchester in a week today in the EFL Cup first round, and the first game of the league season against Derby just a week later. And the fact that the club are deciding to make that change now, having had 6 weeks since the end of the season, considering that Velko Paunovic was available 6 weeks ago, it baffles me personally. I mean, Dan, surely this is sort of the worst possible preparation for a new season next week.
Yeah, pretty much, short of sacking a manager 2-3 games in. I suppose at least you can say that we've done it with a long time left in the transfer window. We've still got a good sort of 6 weeks or so, and recruitment hasn't really started other than and Josh Lauren. Obviously, we've seen lots of people leave the club, but I don't think that anybody that's left under this sort of pre-season so far would have necessarily stayed under a different manager anyway. Other people might disagree, but I can't see that anybody had a particular future given the financial situation we were in. Am I shocked? Absolutely not, because, you know, we're sat in here and we're saying it's our fifth permanent manager in less than 3 years. These owners have shown that they are ruthless. You know, Jose Gomez was not given an awful lot of time after keeping the club up to prove himself. It was a very quick decision made to dispatch him and put Mark Bowen in the job. We saw Ron Gourlay dispatched as well. And we've seen Paul Clement, you know, the axe fall on him as well. So look, these owners and this ownership group have shown that they want results. You know, Dai Yong and Dai Zhu Li have made an absolute fortune in China, and they're clearly business people that know what they want, and they want to get to a certain place. And the people that they've put in charge at Reading Football Club, be it from a football point of view and a business point of view, aren't getting them there. So I'm not surprised that at this stage, Dai Yong has gone to somebody that he knows in a chief executive position. And look, where this managerial appointment has come from, I'm not sure. But Mark Bowen, a bit like Brian McDermott when he was dispatched for Yap Stam, unfortunately can't really point to an awful lot that was sort of showing he was going to turn it round. Yes, he's had, you know, less than a year to do so and less than a full summer transfer window to do it. But the way the season ended was poor. The way the preseason has started has been mixed. But it's not, there's not a buzz, Ollie. I don't know if you'd have to disagree, but I've not got any sense of a buzz at the football club at the moment. I've not got a sense that we're building towards something positive. And are these shock moves the way to do it? Or is it sensible building? People will have different opinions. But, Adam's saying you can't believe it. But for me, this is something very believable based on what we've seen so far.
Yeah, I'm torn. I think it in many ways is believable because we have become that club that almost I wish we hadn't. I think I almost don't want to say that we have become that club. You know, for years Reading were the bastion of stability, but you know, Steve Coppell had 6 years in charge or so. Brian McDermott had a long time in charge to sort of build his project, and now we've had nine managers in space of the last 9 years. And that was, I always looked at clubs like Watford or Leeds when I thought we can never beat that club. You know, this is Reading, but sadly, as you say, over the last few years, we have become that club who hires and fires managers on a regular basis. And whether you agree with the appointment of whether you agree with the sacking, of Mark Byrne or not, for me, I've got a huge amount of sympathy for him because I think it's bloody harsh on him because he, I'm sure, like the rest of us, I assume would have had no idea this was going to happen this week. You know, he was in a dugout for the Gillingham friendly last week. He then again had to be in a dugout for the Tottenham friendly on Friday, knowing full well that he was going to be replaced 24 hours later. And Adam, it's hard not to have that sympathy for him, isn't it?
I think so. I know a lot of people on Twitter have said, well, that's karma for the way that he got the job. Look, we have no idea what happened, even though we made the jokes and they were funny. I don't think, you know, we have no idea what happened behind the scenes when he was appointed. But I think we have a better idea of kind of what's happened now that he's gone. I mean, from all accounts, it looks like he wasn't told at all, like as you were saying. So, you know, to be kept in the dark about it is, I think, out of order, completely out of order. I do feel sorry for him as well, because at one point we were in, you know, playoff form. You know, I was thinking about the Christmas period when we beat QPR, when we beat Preston North End, when we beat Fulham. So, yeah, you can, to an extent, feel sorry for him. And, you know, he's done the job that he was brought in to do, which was to stabilise the ship. And, you know, even though there were murmurings of, oh, God, we're going to get relegated or something like that, I think he did quite a decent job considering. Obviously, the form tailed off near the end of the season. That's probably one of the reasons why I think, right, let's move him to the director of football, try and keep him here for the long term if it's done in the right way. But yeah, I do feel sorry for him and the way that he's been left in the dark about the situation. And, you know, how Reading have treated their employees over the past however many years. Yeah, it's questionable. It really is questionable. So, yeah, I do feel sorry for him.
The thing for me was that in that statement this morning when they announced Veljko Paunović as manager, there was no mention of Mark Byrne at all. And it's surely one of the, you know, only ever circumstances in football that a club announces their new manager without officially acknowledging that the old one has gone. So where it leaves Mark Byrne, we don't know. I mean, I can understand from the media team's point of view in terms of, I'd imagine Mark Byrne himself isn't too clear on sort of on his position going forward. There's been talk when it first emerged that he might be leaving, that he'd be going back to the director of football roles you mentioned, that of course he filled last year when Jose Gomez was in charge. At the time of recording, there has been no official announcement on his future at all. As I say, it wasn't even mentioned in that statement confirming the appointment of Paunović this morning. I'll go to you on this one, Adam, because you did write that now almost famous piece on the Tyler Stens back in July, sort of saying that moving him to director of football would be a good idea. Why for you would that make sense?
There was many reasons. I think it's strangely the good things and the good qualities about Mark Bowen is the reason why I wanted him to move to director of football. He has a major, he has major knowledge on the English game. I think he made some good decisions, it looks like, behind the scenes before he became manager. And when you look at a director of football, they're becoming just as important as a manager nowadays. You know, how long does a manager last now on average in the Championship? Probably less than 12 months, which is shocking, really. And you compare that to a director of football who, you know, oversees change, creates a vision for the club, makes good decisions in the boardroom. And also, you've got to remember as well that he's worked with these players. So he could make some really, really good decisions in the boardroom and support the manager. Obviously, you know, you can question there might be a conflict of interest now and some resentment now that he's been, well, reportedly moved back. But I thought that he would have been a very, very good director of football. I hope he does become director of football because we need his knowledge in there. And I think, for me, I think he might have taken us as far as he could managerially. But in the boardroom, I think he could have been amazing, to be honest. And I hope that he does continue to be a good influence at the club. I know that, well, reportedly, the Dyes like him. And I hope that's true. And I hope that we keep hold of him and for the long term too, because he could really build something at this football club, just not managerially.
He's a proper football man, I'd describe Mark Burton as. You know, clearly loves the game, clearly passionate about his work. You know, been in the game for 20 years managerially and obviously a, you know, very good playing career before that. Adam did touch on it there, Dan, but is there sort of an opposite argument, I suppose, to all of this, that it might perhaps be best for Mark Burton to leave the club altogether? Because we understand that Mark Burton isn't happy at all with the decision to remove his management. Fuming was the words that Tim Deller used yesterday. And Bowen declined to do any interviews after the Tottenham game. In case he said anything he might regret. I'd imagine it would be quite hard almost for sort of him to stay behind almost and, you know, watch someone else manage what is pretty much his team at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, look, it depends what his own future aspirations are. Does he want to stay on the touchline? If so, you know, is a boardroom move going to be good for him? And if he does have those aspirations, is it going to be good for Reading? Because Reading will sit there and think, okay, well, as soon as a job offer comes along, he's going to be out. So, look, I don't think it's going to work, him going back, unless he just sits there and says, right, you know, I've had my fill of management. I actually quite fancy this sort of boardroom level role. I'm going to knuckle down and do it. But as we've said, from what Tim Deller's been reporting and other sort of unsubstantiated reports, he doesn't sound very happy at this. And do you want anybody in their job that's not particularly happy and feels like they've been forced there? I don't know. Maybe, look, is this, you know, is money a factor? The fact he was handed a big new contract, and so this might be a way to get him to constructively leave. I don't know. And then there's all sorts of legal implications with constructive dismissal and all that jazz. But no, look, I can't see it working unless this is something that he wants to do. And by all accounts, this isn't something he wants to at this stage in his career. But I just want to touch on something that Adam said about, and you were talking about feeling sorry for Mark Bowen. I can't, again, I struggle to feel too sorry for him based on the lay of the land and how things look. Because, you know, we go back to those results last season and you look at that record in 2020 and it's not that good. It really isn't that good. It's the sort of form that would get a team in relegation worries and certainly not in the playoffs. And remember when Bowen came in, he was talking about playoffs. That's what, you know, his comments and that early form suggested that he had the players at his disposal to do it. Yes, we lost Lucas Joao and that had a massive effect on the team. But he's going to be working with largely the same group of players for now. And, you know, there's been, again, no real signs that he was getting them into, you know, a flow. So, I struggle to feel too sorry for the bloke based on the circumstances in. Overall, it's a shame for anybody who's got a passion for a club and is clearly a decent individual and has got good qualifications to lose their position. But based on, the specific situation that Reading find themselves in now, again, I don't feel too sorry for him. It no more so than I would feel sorry for, you know, I felt sorry for Paul Clement and Jose Gomez and any of the other managers we've had in recent years. So, but yeah, to go back to the boardroom point, no, I don't see this being a good fit. unless this is something that he really wants to do, and it doesn't seem that way.
You've taken me nicely on to a broader look at Mark Bowen's overall tenure. And from my personal opinion, I've always actually quite warmed to Mark Bowen. Obviously, there was the whole debacle when he took over, but I actually warmed to him quite quickly, and obviously results helping out. He obviously won 1-0 in his first game. Matt Miazga got that 98th-minute winner against Preston. He got 10 points out of a possible 12 from his opening four games, which is more than any other manager in the last 60 years. Yes, obviously that is a small sample size, but you know, considering that Jose Gomez has sort of left the team in the bottom three, I think 1 point in 18 was Gomez's last six games. It was definitely an improvement. And yeah, sure, we didn't push on towards the upper end of the championship, but we still saw runs of results, in my opinion, that, you know, we obviously haven't seen since that playoff final season. You know, we won four games in a row over Christmas. That win against Fulham away on New Year's Day was fantastic. We had three wins in five going into lockdown. Then obviously you do come to the lockdown period, or sorry, the post-lockdown period, and that's, I think, where fans perhaps start to turn against him, because I think it was two wins, two draws and five defeats from those nine lockdown games. And yeah, that's obviously very underwhelming, considering that some people did have playoff aspirations going into the final nine games. The style of play got called into question, you know, very, very defensive-minded. That Charlton game springs to mind where we did win 1-0, but I don't think we had any shots at all beyond the 28th minute or something like that. How do you look back on his time overall, Adam? As I said, there's definitely been pros and cons. It's not been without its faults. But if you're looking at stone cold facts, results wise, he's been Reading's best manager since Yapstam in 16-17.
I think the main thing, and I said this on BBC Berkshire as well, we conceded, I think it was 58 goals in 46 league games. And that may seem like a high amount, but it's not a huge amount for a team that finished where we did. In fact, I think it was the second lowest number of goals conceded from any team outside the top nine of the championship. And what he came in, what he did was he came in, he tightened up the defence, which was much needed. And I hope that we keep that with the new manager, because you know we need to build from the back. So I hope that the new manager does ensure that we're still tight at the back. He came in, had a very good start as manager, got some good results here and there. But as Dan said, I mean, the end of the season was a massive, massive concern for me. And I think the Luton game and the Charlton game and obviously the Huddersfield, the 0-0, I think that kind of papered over the cracks to an extent, because you look at the reaction after the 3-0 home loss against Brentford and people just had enough. I don't think it was all down to the Bowen. I think it was down to the whole club in general over the past few years. But people had just had enough. And, you know, it's a shame, because if he'd kept the form that in the mid-season form that he had, I think people would be more accepting and would have been even more shocked that he'd been moved back to director of football. No, he's tightened up the defence. As I said, it's not anything spectacular what he did, but I think he did an all right job. And it was just the end, which was a massive concern and the reason why I wanted to move him to director of football. But other than that, yeah, I can't sum it up any differently.
Let's move on then to the man that is going to be replacing Mark Bowen in the dugout. Veljko Paunović, I think that's how you pronounce it, known as Pauno. I think to those who are presumably close to him, or fans, I suppose, might call him Paolo. But unless, of course, you're a fan of the MLS or a follower of Serbian youth football, you probably haven't heard of this man. He played for the likes of Atletico Madrid and Getafe during his playing career before starting coaching in the Serbian national team youth setup. He won the Under-20 World Cup in 2015 before being appointed as manager of Chicago Fire over in the States. He was there for four seasons. Not actually doing that well, if truth be told, reaching the end of season playoffs over there on just one occasion out of four. We'll have a piece up on the title stand in the next few days. We've spoken to a few journalists who have covered his career so far, both in Serbia and in Chicago. I think one journalist who reported on him in Chicago said that he oversaw one of the worst four-year periods in Chicago Fire's history. So that's encouraging to hear. But as I say, Dan, we don't know too much about him, but what's your immediate reaction to the appointment of Pamro?
Your basic reaction is who? You can't get away from that. And, you know, if any Reading fan is going to sit here and honestly say that this guy was on their radar, credit to you, obviously follow football far, far closer than the vast majority of people. But you look at his CV, and his CV isn't too bad. I mean, anybody that leads their country to a World Cup win, okay, it's under 20 level. That's a massive achievement. You know, the teams they beat to get there, I think they beat Brazil in the final, didn't they, to win it. So he's clearly got something. Okay, it's, you know, a lot of it is to do with the players you have at your disposal, but this guy's clearly got something. And I'm always wary of looking at pedigrees of managers, because Reading's most successful managers, you look at Brian McDermott, what was his manager experience? Reading's under 21s and, you know, the reserves as it was then, and Slough Town, you know, took us up, you know, got us to a playoff final, FA Cup quarterfinals. Steve Coppell obviously had that pedigree, but Alan Pardew before him, nothing really. Mark McGee going back further than that, nothing really. So it doesn't necessarily preclude you from having success, the fact that you've got a CV that people are scratching their heads going, oh, well, you know, he hasn't done anything, you know, he doesn't know the championship. You know, Mark McGee had never played in, you know, I don't think he'd ever played in the third tier of English football when he came in at Reading. And okay, it's 25 years ago, but the success he had, and Alan Pardew, the same, okay, they've been around the club a little bit, and the same with Brian McDermott. So, yeah, I'm not going to sit here and go, just because he's got no CV and he's never managed in England, that he's going to be an automatic flop. But, you know, those people talk about those, you know, call them cliches or whatnot, for a reason, because generally it's very hard for a manager to come into English football and have immediate success. It has been done. You know, you look at Nuno Espirito Santo at Wolves, he was given the tools to do the job, and he's absolutely flown with it. So let's hope it's that kind of scenario, but it's all going to boil down to the players he's got at his disposal, Ollie, because do I think he's necessarily going to turn this squad of players he's got at his disposal that played at Tottenham yesterday into a top six side? I would really struggle to see that. But if he's given sort of five or six top quality players and he can find a way to gel those players together, I said he's got the coaching pedigree and he seems to have that background to be able to get something out of a squad. So that's going to be the X factor, and I'm happy to sort of hold fire on making too many judgments until then.
Yeah, you mentioned Nuno. I mean, even with him, you know, the Wolves brought in the likes of Ruben Neves and Diogo Jota as well. So he certainly had the tools at his disposal. I don't really buy the argument that just because you've never managed in England before, you're going to be a failure. It certainly helps, of course it does. And for sure, I'd prefer someone like Eddie Howe or Chris Hughton, but realistically, those two managers are way out of Reading's, perhaps not price range, but I don't think either of those two would have wanted to come to Reading. We aren't a particularly exciting proposition for any new manager, perhaps lured by the prospect of a big transfer budget, but in terms of status at the moment, we're not a club where managers like that want to come. Someone that I'd perhaps compare him to is maybe someone like Steve Cooper, Swansea's manager, obviously, who won the Under-17 World Cup with England in 2017. Never had a club job in his life before taking over Swansea last summer, and obviously did a great job there to get them into the top six on the final day. So he's got that pedigree for sure. At club level, the things that I've been hearing about him from his time at Chicago Fire, as I say, aren't particularly encouraging. But I think the background sort of behind the scenes is very different over in MLS. There's a lot.
If I can just jump in, I think the thing that Reading fans, I think everybody needs to sort of look at based on what we've seen now for the past few years, is we're getting away from a manager now. We're very much getting into Reading having head coaches, because it's been clear ever since the ties took over that the manager seems to have less and less and less input into the people coming into the football club. So we're not necessarily looking now for an Eddie Howe that's going to come in, you know, in the old Sir Alex Ferguson mold and, you know, micromanage every aspect of the football club, handle negotiations. You know, even Steve Coppell was starting to get away from that sort of hands-on approach. He had that sort of good dialogue with Nick Hammond and his scouting team. But we now very much seem to be in a situation where players are being brought into the football club by whoever, we're not fully sure. And it's now up to a coach to get the most out of that group. So again, I'm less worried about getting someone in like a Hughton or a Howe, because the owners clearly aren't going to allow that one person to have that overarching power anymore.
would agree to an extent, but then I think also if that is going to be the case, you then need some sort of consistency behind the scenes. And perhaps that's when someone like Mark Bowen takes the director of football role. Because if you are going to change coaches on a regular basis, using Brentford as an example, not they change regularly, but when Dean Smith left Brentford for Aston Villa, they had a ready-made replacement in mind in terms of Thomas Frank, and it was quite a seamless transition because everything behind the scenes at Brentford works very, very well. And for me, the behind the scenes of Reading at the moment is completely volatile. So if you're going to bring in a coach just to fit a style of play or just to be a filler, if you want, and for people behind the scenes to be controlling it, obviously we're hearing rumours and stuff about Kia controlling stuff behind the scenes. Dai Young doesn't seem to know too much about football. Whether this Dai Young Pan knows much about football, I don't know. But yeah, it's very, very difficult, isn't it? I mean, Adam, what was your reaction to finding out the news that Pounder would be appointed as Reading's new manager?
If I'm honest, I had exactly the same thought as you in terms of positives, in terms of Steve Cooper, who's done very well, obviously led Swansea City to the playoffs. But I think for me, I looked at his CV and I wasn't convinced. You know, I think that we need someone with championship experience, someone who knows the league. Obviously, the one good thing about him coaching young players is the fact that he can bring through the likes of McIntyre and Holmes and Elise. And I hope with that, we can keep our kind of philosophy and identity of making full use of the academy. And if we can do that, then, I'll be happy enough, because, you know, we need to make sure as well that we're financially responsible, because players like McIntyre and Tom Holmes haven't cost us a penny except from in wages. So if we can use them, then I'll definitely be optimistic. But for me, I hope that they don't completely just throw money at it again. Obviously, you go back to Nigel Howe and the influence that he had. You know, if Howe had any real influence, I don't think George Puskas would have signed last summer. So I hope that money isn't thrown at it, especially now that I think the bridge between Howe and the EFL and Reading with Howe is now gone pretty much, even though he's still vice president, vice chairman. It's just a weird one, isn't it? It's just a weird one. It's one of those where we have to wait and see. But for me, one of the caveats with my article was the fact that we needed to bring in someone who we could trust for the long term, in terms of championship experience and someone who's going to develop players. Now, of course, he could develop young players, but championship experience, he just does not have at all. And that was one of the caveats from my article. If we were going to move Bowen back to director of football, then we needed to bring in someone experienced. And it's also going back to the fact of influence. I mean, Keir Jorobchan, I'm not sure how much influence he has. But I'm not overly upset if the new manager doesn't have too much influence or control, too much control. Because I think it'll be left now to Mark Bowen to build a vision for the club, I hope. That's what needs to happen. Otherwise, you know, we could really go down the pan.
Hey, do go and check out that piece on the Tyler Stand. It's not up just yet as we record. It should be up in the next couple of days. Sort of going into detail about Pounovich's style of play, his approach to young players, which is actually quite surprising, actually, considering that even though he was in charge of that Serbia under-20 side, apparently he didn't actually have that much success in bringing through young players at Chicago Fire. We spoke to a couple of journalists, both in Chicago and in Serbia. So that's well worth a read if you have the time. As ever, social media has been very vocal in the last few days in the appointment. Fair to say, not very popular at all, again, probably because he's a largely unknown and the fact that it comes a week before the start of the season. But it strikes me as very, very similar to the scenario where Mark Bowen came in himself last October, sort of amid accusations that he'd appointed himself. He'd sacked Jose Gomez and appointed himself. And the vitriol surrounding that appointment was something that I'd never, ever seen before. I mean, there wasn't one person in the Reading fan base that wanted Mark Bowen in charge. I think he said in his first press conference, actually, that the only way that he could get fans on side was to win games. And obviously, he did do that. He started very well. I warmed to him quite quickly. I think a lot of other fans did as well. And is that going to have to be the case again for Pounovich, Dan? Because, yes, he's unpopular at the moment. We don't really know much about him, but if he can get off to a good start, all of this outrage might go away quite quickly.
Yeah, I mean, look, again, he's got the advantage of coming in right in the middle of a transfer window when the club can make big signings. And we, you know, you can't underestimate the fact that that has, you know, if Reading bring in four or five relatively big or exciting names, suddenly his appointment becomes a sideshow to seeing how these new players get on. So he's got that ability to sort of, you know, don't want to say distract from his appointment, but you know what I mean. It's whereas managers that have come in mid-season, be it Jose Gomez, you know, Paul Clement, Mark Bowen, they've kind of had to deal with what they've got. So fans have immediately put the microscope on the manager because, oh, it's the manager. You know, they've come in to get more out of this group of players. So are they going to do it? Whereas, you know, Pavlovic comes in and gets, you know, the benefit of having, you know, however many new signings to play with. And if he doesn't get those signings, then again, the spotlight will turn away from him and it will be on the board. It will be, why haven't you got in these new signings? So it's a great time for him to come in. And I think he will get that leeway. He's not got any of that baggage that Bowen had with the old, did he appoint himself, sort of memes and things that were going around. And, you know, he's not got that sort of negative stigma of failure that Paul Clement had before him, or the complete unknown. I think this guy's more known than Jose Gomez. He's got a better CV as well. So you kind of have to really go back to, a long time, maybe all the way back to Steve Coppell's appointment for a manager that you could really sort of go, where Reading fans were like, yep, this is the man. And even then, it wasn't necessarily a unanimous appointment. There were lots of other names in the frame. So you're never going to please everybody, but he does have this great fresh slate to work off. Expectations have got to be so low now amongst the fan base. We talked about how the end of the season, the frustrations that came with it. You know, we've been involved in relegation and bottom half battles now for so long, other than that, you know, brief little playoff jaunt that was lucky, but I won't get back into that debate today because we could do another podcast on that. So, yeah, look, great position for him to work with. You know, Adam made a great point about having all these young players to work with as well, when he's got that sort of young academy core to work with. Can he do the same that Brian McDermott did when he sort of replaced Brendan Rodgers and he had the likes of Pierce, Robson Kanu, Karachan to work with and help them flourish? Only time's going to tell.
Yeah, October 5th, I think, is when the transfer window shuts. So he's got just over a month to bring players in again, whether it's his players that bring in or whether they come from Kia's contact book, I don't know. And we've already been linked to Andrija Zivkovic, I think his name is. He was part of Pavlovic's under-20 World Cup winning squad in 2015, released by Benfica last week, and quite highly rated by all accounts. But I looked him up yesterday. He's got the same goal scoring record at Benfica as Olajon did. So how much you can take from that, I don't know. But let's end then on a brief discussion on the man who made all of this happen. Dai Young, Reading's power-hungry egomaniac of an owner. What have we learned about him over the last few days, Adam? Because Ben Thomas wrote a piece for Tyler Sten this morning where he discussed sort of how there was very little reasoning sort of behind his decision to change managers and sort of how that might be the most baffling part of the whole thing. But have we got any sort of clear indication of what the hell Dai Young's plan actually is, Adam?
I think in the past it was very short-termist. With all the signings that we made in 2017-18 after the playoff final, we made a huge amount of signings, inflated our wage bill. And, you know, even last summer, it felt like we were going for a promotion at that point with Puskas and Zhao and those sort of players. I hope now, you know, I'm looking at it as positively as I possibly can, with Mark Bowen perhaps moving to director of football, and then we've got, you know, the new manager who could perhaps come in and work with new players. But now he has to build a structure, I think, in terms of a scouting network and that sort of thing, because I don't think we can have, obviously we can have a bit of Kid Jurobchan, but I don't think we can have a lot of him. You know, he's like confectionery, you know, we can have a little bit, but don't have too much of it. Don't indulge too much. Otherwise, you know, you could be in a bit of trouble. But I think we'll learn more about him, about the owner, over the next couple of months, as opposed to just over the last few days, because, you know, it could be seen in many different ways, the departure of Bowen from manager. It could be seen as short-termist. It could be seen as a long-term aim or a long-term vision. I think the key thing that will play a part in this is the signings that we make. If Dai Young throws however many million at it and gets in eight or nine players or whatever it is, then you can say, right, this guy is definitely short-termist and he hasn't learned. But if he does become financially responsible, more financially responsible, then we can look back on him in a better light. Obviously, the Josh Lawrence signing was very good, but we've got to continue on that sort of path, even if FFP is frozen. Because, you know, you look at transfer fees in terms of FFP, but look at the wage bill as well. I think there was someone brought up something about £40 million in outgoings at one point and only £18 million in incomings. Now, that's a job for the new CEO to fix in terms of the incomings. I hope that he decides to do that. And I hope that the releases as well in the summer with, you know, Blackett and Obita and, you know, all the other players, I hope that that's made the wage bill go down quite drastically. But I think we're going to have to judge his signings in terms of having a view on this decision. And I just think that if he does continue to be financially responsible, then this could be seen as a long-term vision. But we need him now to step up to the plate and to make the right decisions, because some of the decisions over the past few years have just been shambolic, really.
Clearly, Dan, he's an owner with a lot of money, a man who is desperate to play Premier League football. As Adam mentioned, there are rumours murmuring that the EFL might freeze their profit and sustainability guidelines for the new season. Again, there's been nothing official on that, but potentially, if that does happen, it might encourage Dai Young to spend that bit more than he would have otherwise to try and get to the Premier League. And it may well end up being promotion or bust.
Yeah, I was going to say, power hungry and egomaniac. You're not going to be on his Christmas list, Ollie.
I'm not sure I want to be, in fairness, but well, if he could chuck TT a couple of million, I mean, that would be very nice. But
what's he worth? $700 billion, isn't he, or something yeah, like that? I was going to say, I wouldn't mind being on that Christmas list. I imagine you know, instead of getting like a matchbox Ferrari, you might get an actual one. but no, look, in all seriousness, I think again. Yes, Reading have had the Reading way was very successful, and we look back on that very fondly. The success we had under Alan Pardew, Steve Copeland, then Brian McDermott was fantastic. But let's not forget that, again, you cast your minds back a little bit deeper. And so John Medeski didn't necessarily always have the smoothest of rides. If you look at the sort of time after Mark McGee left, you had Jimmy Quinn and Mick Gooding in for a couple of seasons, then Terry Bullivant had a season, Tommy Burns had a disastrous season and a half. And then we had to turn to Alan Pardew. So we have been through these little spells before where the football club is trying to find its way. I don't think it's necessarily always fair to look at the owner and go, okay, well, they're making too many changes. He's a businessman. He's a very successful businessman. He's obviously had a way of getting that success. So yes, he doesn't know football, and football works in a different way to the business world, but he's clearly not getting what he wants out of the people that are running his football club. And he's making these decisions and trying to find the right formula. And it's going to take time for him to get that right. And that's the optimistic view, and the one that I'm trying to cling to the positivity around this and not get myself too bogged down in everything that has gone wrong before. And, you know, where, you know, the worst case scenario is. I'm trying to look at the positives here. And the positives are, as you say, this guy's got a lot of money and he's putting a lot of money into Reading Football Club. We've seen the move to the new training ground happen. You know, we were worried before that might not even happen at all. And we've seen it happening. You know, we've seen the club not go into administration and go bust. I was going to say Wigan, they haven't gone bust, but you know the problems that they've had. We've not had that yet. Yes, we've been flirting with FFP, but in a weird way, the fact that we're so flirting with FFP rules is actually a sign of an owner that is committed, because he's clearly been pushing to the very limits the amount of money he's allowed to put in. And I do feel sorry for owners like him, who clearly want to support the football club, but FFP rules, such as they are at the moment, limit how much you can. And again, it's probably a whole nother podcast to talk about FFP rules. But back in the day, you know, a Jack Walker at Blackburn was allowed to just chuck the money in. And as long as he was happy to underwrite losses, Dave Whelan at Wigan, as long as they were happy to underwrite those losses, no harm, no foul. That whole FFP thing was brought in to prevent the Anton Zingarevic situation, where someone that didn't have any money at all would then leverage loans against the football club and then leave them in all sorts of trouble. This doesn't, and I'm touching every piece of wood I can find here, that doesn't seem to be the case with this owner. And if he wants to put the money in it, you know, it's got to be frustrating for him seeing clubs like Wolves and Manchester City and Bournemouth have owners that can just go in and you know, put in tens of millions of pounds into a football club and get that success. And for him to be told, oh, I'm sorry, you can't do that. You know, in very few other walks of life is someone told no, especially someone that's made so much money as him. So I do sympathise, and, you know, it's an argument. Okay, well, if you don't like the rules, don't play the game. But, you know, I don't think we'd want to be in a situation with this economy, the world the way it is at the moment, of having to find a new owner because he's sick of not playing by the rules. So, yeah, we are getting to a stage of how many times can we go through this cycle, and is there going to come a time where he pushes one step too far and we end up going down instead of up? But again, leaning back on the positive side of things, I'm really hoping that this is the one, this is the start of something to do. And if the league do suspend FFP, and he can now, and the pair of the owners, sorry, can now put in as much money as they want to support the football club, you know, fair play to them, as long as they are prepared very much to underwrite that money and not go to, as Anton Zagarevich went to, basically the payday lenders of football back then, Vibrac, I think they were called. You know, that is not happening at the moment. If it's his own money, he's happy to spend it, and he wants to go and buy £100 million worth of players, and the league rules allow it for a season, go for it. That's your money, do it. And until one of us or another Reading Football Club fan or someone that thinks they can do better can go to the football club with an offer to buy it, we're just going to have to strap in and see where the ride takes us.
Yeah, I mean, I think if he was our owner 10 years ago, then he must be a perfect owner, because without those FFP guidelines, you know, that's the way that Abramovich built up Chelsea, and the way that City got all their millions and stuff like that. So, yeah, he's obviously consigned to these regulations. My worry is that if it doesn't work out for him this time around, does he get bored? I don't know. I mean, we spoke to Brian Tebreden about the owners. He'd obviously worked very closely with them, both at Reading and at Caisse Roger-Lair, on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. And he did say, if anything, they are good people, that they want success for Reading. My cynicism might say that they want success for themselves more than anything. I think a lot, for me, I see a lot of these sort of owners as, you know, they like having football clubs as a sign of their wealth, something to show off, which, you know, might well be true. But ultimately, he's paid the money for the football club. You say he saved the club, really. Well, not saved the club, but, you know, the tie owners, you know, weren't willing to invest much more money. He's come in, spent, as I say, a fair amount, all credit to him. Ultimately, it's his club. He can do what he wants with it. But that in itself, you know, almost scares me. But whatever happens, it certainly won't be dull. That brings to an end this podcast, reflecting on one of the maddest weeks in Reading's recent history. Thank you very much for tuning in and joining us. Adam and Dan, thank you very much for popping on, as always.
No worries.
More than welcome. Thanks for having me.
The players are now out in Portugal, meeting Veljko Panovic. They'll play a friendly, I believe, out there before coming back to the UK ahead of next weekend's EFL Cup game against Colchester United. And then the league season gets underway. And if the last few days are anything to go by, it's going to be one hell of a roller coaster. Come on, you Arse.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.